Hello and welcome to Hindsight here on RN. I'm Lorena Allam. Today we travel inside the Robber's Cave. In 1954, at a small national park in rural Oklahoma, psychologist Muzaffer Sheriff brought two groups of 11-year-old boys to a summer camp. The boys from Oklahoma City arrived at the camp excited at the idea of 3 weeks outdoors. What they didn't know, and what they were never told, was that their behaviour would be studied and used in theories about war, interracial conflict and prejudice for generations to come. Sheriff's Robber's Cave study became hugely influential. Almost 60 years since it was conducted, it's still cited in psychology textbooks today. But what's less well known is that the study was Sheriff's third and final search for an answer to discrimination, bigotry and war. As a young scholar in his native Turkey in 1944, Muzaffer Sheriff was arrested and jailed for his anti-fascist writing. On his release, he fled to the USA, where he remained for the rest of his life. The story you'll hear today features archival recordings and notes taken during Sheriff's experiments. Our producer, Gina Perry, takes us deep inside the Robber's Cave.
One by one, we were all sucked into the awful whirlpool. But surely, ladies and gentlemen, I put it to you, surely we must not let that happen again.
Our speaker has been a research fellow at Yale, and he has been a distinguished visiting professor at Wisconsin and Texas.
I think that research is always autobiographical. Many people would argue with that, but I think if you look into Sheriff's own personal experience in Turkey, he was witness to quite a bit of cultural conflict.
And it is with great pleasure that I present to you now our distinguished speaker, Professor Muzaffer Sheriff.
In the early 1950s, in the post-war period, there was a lot of interest, I think as a result of the Second World War, in international conflict. Muzaffer Sheriff, his own life experience was quite interesting. He was interested in the nature of prejudice, the nature of social groups and social norms. So, like pioneers in social psychology, he was not afraid to tackle that issue of intergroup conflict and to find a means of making that, transforming that into a research study.
Never before in history has so much hope for so many people been gathered together in a single organization.
We were zealots. We were zealots in that we were anti-Nazi. And so the idea of getting some way of breaking down prejudice between the groups, we were zealots.
July 1953, Camp Tulualak.
Well, we know the name of the camp was Tulualak. Whether it's been changed, we don't know, right?
A three-week experiment.
And we were told Middle Grove...
Muzaffer Sheriff takes 24 boys to an isolated campsite in upstate New York. The boys are divided into two teams and pitted against one another in a series of intense competitions. The experiment? To turn friends into enemies. Or will enemies become friends?
We were a group of boys. We were put on what I remember as school buses, taken for a long ride, and deposited at a what was called a camp, a summer camp.
Subject: Doug Grissett, 10 years old, Schenectady, New York. Protestant, middle class, group-minded, from well-adjusted family. Mother housewife, father pharmacist.
I didn't know anyone at the camp. Whether this was design or not, I don't know.
Subject: Walt Burkhard, 11 years old, lives in El Plaus, New York. Protestant, middle class, group-minded, from well-adjusted family.
I got to the camp with these other kids, and the camp itself was out in the woods. There was some sort of main building.
Stage one, spontaneous friendship and group formation.
When we first showed up at the camp, we were all together. We got to know each other, maybe even make friends with more people than would be in our eventual group. I mentioned that there were two groups, the Panthers and the Pythons, but all these boys were together at the beginning. And then, well, they put us in the same big building, and we were eating together. I don't know what else we were doing together, but certainly eating together. Maybe we had activities together the first few days, too, before the groups were formed.
Stage two, experimental group formation. Boys divided into two groups, assigned to separate quarters. The observers record the boys' reactions to this separation.
Each group had a tent. I was a python. One reason it stayed with me, because at the time, I was 11, I didn't know what a python was.
Do you remember which group you might have been a member of?
Not at all, and I laugh about that only because I'm scared to death of snakes, and it's about the only thing in this world that I think I'm really afraid of. So I'm wondering whether I was a panther and the pythons were my enemies at that time.
Camp Tulualak, July 1953, observational team. Names in alphabetical order. Jim Carper, Herbert Kelman, Marvin Sussman, Jack White, Project Director Muzaffar Sharif.
He was trying to demonstrate what it takes to create antagonism.
Assistant Administrator at Camp Tulualak, O.J. Harvey.
Sociologists, anthropologists knew that if you had groups and, you know, that competed, certain things happen and whatever. We were the first and probably the only ones to induce it experimentally. And so he wanted to show that competition would create ready prejudice or inequality and negative stereotypes, and then create a situation where they work together to break it down.
And I'm going to have it posted up here on this chart. We're going to draw it up later. I just have it in this light pencil now, and it says a tournament of performances and skills. And down here you have your softball, camp inspection, tug of war, tent pitching, skills.
Camp Tulualak, stage three, commencement of competitions. Successful completion of this stage required before progression to stage four. No peace without war.
Now over here I have the point scores. For those who win, they get 10 points. For those who lose, in every activity, they get 5 points.
Every time that I recall being at the dining hall, they paraded a prize, and only the winning team was going to get anything. There was no consolation prize. And that prize, curiously enough, nowadays, when you think about it, was a giant jackknife. They created an atmosphere where I remember I wanted that jackknife so badly. So they were real good at getting us to want the prize.
Remember, you can win these knives if your team wins.
Each person on a team gets one.
Right.
You know, there were a great number of different competitions that they put us through. I say that because it always reminded me, as I think I've mentioned to you in the past, that it reminded me of my time in basic training. Putting us through as opposed to enjoying. They were testing us all the time, is my recall, as to whether we could be better than the others.
Hey,
you guys up to playing
baseball today?
Yeah!
Are you?
We're going to have to play against the West Side.
Were you?
Competition 1. Baseball.
At some point in one of the baseball or softball games, I was the catcher on one of the two teams. And so I was in the firing line for every kid that came around third base trying to score. And so I, this little twink of a kid, gets put at catcher, and I doubt seriously if there was very much equipment, probably just a glove, to protect me. And somebody, I'm sure unintentionally, ran sort of through me. And I remember is waking up in some hospital. I don't know how long I'd been at the camp. I don't have direct recall. Your records may show that a week, 10 days, 2 weeks, I don't know. But I ended up in a hospital. I gather that my parents, who had been kept away, all parents were kept away from all of us during these times. Again, a great distinction from a regular summer camp. And they came and got me. I remember that quite vividly.
Just let me move that around. Can you see that? Or I can just move the angle of it if you like.
Boston, July 2012. Interview with Harvard Emeritus Professor of Social Ethics, Herb Kelman. Participant observer at Camp Tulalip. Note, invited by Muzaffar Sharif to be the camp's scientific conscience.
There was a feeling that there wasn't enough hostility developing. And so the staff decided to introduce another factor.
The issues are this. The Panthers accuse...
Stage 3.
The other group...
Observers disturbed by fraternization during contests. In order to fan tension, frustration exercises are instigated by vandalizing of one group's domain. Open hostility essential for progression to next phase.
Some of the clothes of the Panthers were hidden and distributed by the staff as a frustrating situation, with the idea of making it appear like the pythons took it, and the argument...
Devise as many frustration exercises as necessary to achieve the desired effect. Note, both groups must remain unaware of the manipulation and fabrication by observers.
The things that I remember from the camp are primarily things that are out of character. I remember in particular at one point with a bunch of other boys, and I to this day don't know how this started. I remember throwing bricks, cinder blocks, things you make fireplaces out of, at a piano, basically destroying a piano. I had had many piano lessons. Let's see, I was 11. I think I might have had 4-5 years worth of piano lessons at that point. Another thing that was definitely out of character for me was I remember getting into a fight with one other, I guess he was a python, but I don't remember. But anyway, there was this big fight. And I remember somehow getting a hold of a T-shirt of his and cutting it up with a pocket knife. This is so uncharacteristic, unlike me. I've never done something like this again. But certainly I did it at this camp.
Camp Tulalip, Stage 3, Day 6. The Panthers group announced as winners of competitions. Observers' notes. Caution. Panthers suggest pythons should also get a prize for playing so well. Note. Observers concerned the degree of enmity not escalating. Action. More extreme frustration required. The tent.
Everything was going not fast enough, really. The antagonism wasn't becoming fast enough. So Marvin Sussman, a sociologist from Yale, tore the tent down. And then when the boys came back and found it, they went over and jumped on the other group, and the other group said, no, we didn't do it. And they came over and helped them restore it.
The staff, while the kids were out for outings or whatever it is, away from their tents, the staff went into the camp, and they were separated from each other, the two campsites, went there and did havoc to their... They pulled down their tent, overturned their beds, tied the clothing. I mean, you know, kind of a raid on the tent. And the staff did that. And that was obviously a way to increase the hostility. From my point of view, this was really a serious violation of the experimental design.
When you wake up, we were there, and you passed through in about 10, 15 minutes. You were after that, after about 10, 15 minutes, that you want our flagpole to
Half years, I think, the beginning of it. A little after 8 p.m.
Well, yeah, go on. Keep reading.
While I was in the office, I heard a lot of noise, which aroused my curiosity. I ran over to the mess hall and heard a great deal of shouting. Then I saw all the panthers and their counselors and all the pythons and their counselors. It was only a while later that I learned that these were the repercussions of an experimentally introduced frustration experience. The panther tent had been torn down, their beds turned over, their clothes tied together, etc., in the expectation that these actions would be attributed to the pythons. There was great excitement and noise, and it looked just like the scene of a disaster. The panthers were very upset and angry. Standish suggested to other pythons that they help the panthers straighten out their tent, and then in return, the panthers would help the pythons. Churchill immediately expressed agreement with the suggestion, and a number of pythons started to help. Even though O.J. called the pythons together and told them to return to their own area, at least five pythons remained behind and helped the panthers. Do you want to hear more?
Yes, absolutely.
A lot of shouting that continued to go on was concerned with the question, who did it? Who could have done it if it wasn't the pythons? Someone said that he'll spend the rest of his stay at camp finding out who did it. Waters said that he'll demand an alibi from everyone in the group and turn to me saying, where were you?
That does sound familiar. I'm not even sure whose tent was torn down. But yes, there was a tent that was down. And it also sounds familiar that we didn't believe that the other group had done it.
An interesting thing happened. A terribly interesting thing happened, I think. You know, I mean, these kids found their own way to reconciliation.
Camp Tulualek, Stage 3, Day 11 of 3 weeks. Experiment aborted.
To know that the boys had absorbed the sportsmanship concept, I think that's what it is anyway, to a greater extent than the combative concept, is it's really appealing to me. And it's led me to think about things, a lot of things, in different ways, good ways. It's very uplifting.
I guess the boys there all got to know each other in the first few days, and it seems as if when you have friends, it's going to be a little tougher to really compete with your friends. It does seem like common sense, doesn't it? Sometimes I think the rest of the world should know about this common sense.
After the study failed, we were in charge of the dismantling of that study and then in charge of rebirth of the 54 study.
1954, Oklahoma. Robbers Cave State Park. Tourist brochures describe its history, a hideout for outlaws like Jesse James and Bell Starr. After abandoning the study in 1953, Muzaffar Sharif will make a third and final attempt at his experiment to create conflict and determine some resolution. Hatred to harmony. War to peace.
Well, the Robbers Cave, we all agreed if I could be in charge of the logistics, we would do it.
So this was the last ditch attempt. Mm-hmm. The Robbers Caves was the third and final.
Yes.
So did the parents know that their boys were being involved in an experiment?
Partially. I told them the truth, not the whole truth, but I told them there was an experiment, and we discussed how gangs and cliques and that sort of thing worked. And what I told them we'd be doing some of that. We'd be studying leadership, so who became leader and followers. And the parents were pretty eager for the kids to go, and the kids were eager too. Let me talk a little bit about subject selection, if I might. We didn't want any of the boys to know each other. And we went to Oklahoma City because it was the only place that had enough subjects. And these little guys were 11 years old. So I went to all the schools, and I would observe them on the playground. I'd done a lot of work already in gangs and cliques and that sort of thing. So I would go to and get permission of the principal, and then I would check with the teachers and the principals on their grades and their performance and so forth. We wanted to make the subjects as homogeneous as possible, all from a similar background, about the same in scholarship. And so keep in mind, we went to great length to get kids that were normal. As far as we could tell, none of them had pathology.
Well, I was a city boy and lived in a rather poor area of town.
Subject, Smut Smith, 11 years old, resident Oklahoma City. Mother, secretary, father, sales manager.
I don't remember ever going on a summer camp before.
I was in a group. All of us were shown to a cabin. I'm guessing there would have been at least 15 of us in that one cabin. And that would have been the group I stayed with.
Subject, Bill Snipes, resident, Oklahoma City, mother, housewife, father, salesman.
I don't know if the other group was along with us in another bus, but we didn't have anything to do with them at that time. We went to our own cabin. They had these cots or beds, whatever they were there. I believe they were army cots or something. And it was a strange thing. I certainly cannot say that I knew what was going on, that I knew this was some scientific, psychological experiment. I did not have any idea about that. But I thought, boy, I've fallen into some kind of a deal here. How did I get picked for this? This is great.
Robbers Cave, June 1954. Stage 1 Hypothesis. Groups develop an identity. Each group defines themselves by name. One is known as Rattlers, the other Eagles.
There were 11 in each bunch. We wouldn't call them groups yet, but we wanted to take them down separately. And so we took them down a day apart. One bunch went down one day and one the next. And there were two cabins that were separated by quite a distance because we didn't want them to have contact until the groups were generated. And that was one of the criteria, you bet. I was trying to get off to ourselves as much as possible. Because the way we were setting it up, we didn't want any parents to come or any outsiders to come.
When I was there, it was like out in a huge field somewhere with nothing around it. It reminded me of big granite boulders and granite rocks, real high, maybe 20, 30 feet in the air.
Now, about Robbers Cave itself, I remember being a little bit disappointed that cave really wasn't much of a cave. It wasn't very big at all. But we enjoyed going there.
So there were three stages in the study. The first stage was the formation of the identity of each group of 11 boys. Correct. Who were strangers until then.
Correct. They didn't know each other. And groups were formed, and then we had them to engage in various competitions.
The first group to come tomorrow morning will be a group who call themselves Rattlers. They'll be here at 7:15. After they leave the mess hall, the other group will come. The other group got the name of Eagles.
If you really think about it, it's like little nation states. It was very important that they have names and that they create flags with their names and so forth. Now, the specifics of the naming was partly adventitious in that I was saying that the ones that came to call themselves Rattlers, they'd tried other things, but they ran into the rattlesnake when they were out on camping, and that was a big story.
I remember we got to go swimming a lot, and that was, everyone really enjoyed that. We had a pond, and then one day when we were at that pond, we heard this awful noise over in the bushes just up close to the shore. And when we went over to see what it was a frog trying to get loose from two snakes. There were two snakes, and each snake had a rear leg of that frog in its mouth trying to swallow it. And our supervisor carried a gun, and he shot those snakes and freed the frog.
I thought maybe we could look at some photos in the book. Do you want to do that with this one here?
Either one, let me get a drink.
Okay.
Boulder, Colorado, okay. May 2010.
Now let's see.
O.J. Harvey, Colorado University Professor Emeritus of Psychology.
What this says is the first exploration of a robber's cave. This is when they discovered the cave. There was a cave there. And now the boys that had the cave were the Rattlers, so that was a big thing. So here they're exploring. And they very quickly, I left out the term our. So the baseball diamond was our. Everything was our. And so they preempted the things.
They staked out their own territory.
They staked out. It was a real stakeout.
Today, June 27, 1954, we have started stage two in this experiment. There is going to be a series of contests or a tournament. Knives and medals will be used as rewards.
This is my seat where I am.
You know, yesterday Bob mentioned to you that you're going to have a tournament of events. They wanted you guys to have a tournament so you could play in various activities and various events. So I told them that's all right with me, and they went ahead and did it.
Robber's Cave, Stage 2 Hypothesis. Groups with no previous contact will develop prejudice and hostility towards one another. Outright enmity develops when groups are put in competition.
Jack White, Senior Counselor of the Eagles, that's what the E stands for.
Yeah, I knew that.
Jack White, Senior Counselor of the Eagles, and Bob Hood, Senior Counselor of the Rattlers, they got together at last and worked out an agreement for a contest so we can win fine prizes, rewards, and a beautiful trophy. That's all those things up there you can win. So they've agreed on a tournament, which includes baseball as well as other contests. There'll be not only baseball, but there'll be other contests too, which include the tournament. But now listen to this, fellas. Listen to this now. You cannot individually win a ribbon, a medal, and a knife. Remember that the only way that you can win them for yourself is for you to be on the winning side.
I do remember that we kind of ganged up and plotted our strategies, and I remembered specifically tug of war being at the head of our group in line, you know, and I remember we really had fun doing that. If I remember correctly, we lost.
We spent more time actually doing things to this Eagles group than climbing around on Robber's Cave. We were always in some task to outdo them, at least for the first half of that camp. Whether it happened naturally or whether the counselors helped it along, I'm guessing the latter. But I don't know. I was an 11-year-old boy and didn't pay much attention. I was having a great time.
Man, we played a lot of games. We played, seems like we may have played ball and just a lot of different games and competed against the other team.
The first thing we did was maybe have a tug-of-war against each other and built up some animosity toward each other. And there was a lot of name-calling and yelling. Your standard sports events where the teams have an opportunity to do a little mouth-talking at each other. And it was that thing from what an 11-year-old would do it. We screamed, we called them names, all kinds of things. Then we had baseball games. In thinking about it, it's almost like they were building this animosity. We didn't like them.
Hey, we'll work that out some way good. 10 pitching, 2 out of 3. You fellas been practicing on that, and I saw how you can do that. So
you 10 minutes. You gotta break that record, yeah.
10 pitching, 2 out of 3, 8 points for the winners, 5 for the other side.
Oh.
Tug of war, 2 out of 3 on different days. 6 points for the winners, 3 for the other side.
Hey, is the baseball game all on the same day?
No, huh?
So how did you generate the hostility between the groups?
In phase two, we had 10 or so activities. It was zero-sum games. We had gotten a bunch of knives and gifts. And the losers were to get nothing and the winners were to get all. We cheated a bit in that. We wanted them to be neck and neck to right at last. We needed to be able to manipulate the score. And that we did, and they'd insist do that, like cabin inspection and a few things like that. We would assign whatever points we needed to bring the other up very close. So that was that way we kept sort of a nip and tuck.
For the winner, 3 points for the other side. And here's one, cabin inspection. Every day of the tournament, every day of the tournament, starting in the morning. Not today,
Robber's Cave. Instructions to observers. Observe groups 12 hours a day to monitor and record. Close, covert observation of subjects is critical. Daily reports to be submitted before midnight.
Never had a clue that it was an experiment. I do remember. You know, it didn't surprise me when I found out that it was, because I remember some of those sponsors had notepads and they'd take notes on, and I didn't know what I didn't pay any attention to that. Never was suspicious that they were actually running an experiment on us or anything.
Stage 2, escalation of friction. Hypothesis. Frustration increases hostility. Action. Desecration of Rattler's flag. Goal. Incite retaliation by group.
After one of the games, the Rattlers had left the flag on the playground, and the Eagles burned it. And the Rattlers raided them that night. Raided the Eagles and threw their stuff into the creek and all kinds of things, a great deal of us. Now, next day, in retaliation, the Eagles raided the Rattlers and messed up their place a great deal, and there was a retaliation, and each messed up the place of the other. And the Eagles carried in buckets of dirt and all of that and did a pretty good job on the Rattlers.
We raided each other's cabins in the middle of the night. I mean, jumped through the windows and made a lot of noise. And they're throwing clothes, throwing bed sheets, everything. And just generally wrecked the cabin. And then jumped out of the windows and took off and went back to our cabin.
And where were the counselors at this point? Do you know?
Well, there was one that was with us all the time. So I guess they knew about it. I don't even remember who suggested we do it, but we weren't there to hurt them that I remember. We weren't going to do that. We were just going to disturb their peace and quiet, their sleep, and mess their cabin up a little bit. Now, they did the same to us. I just don't remember who started it.
Escalation of friction. Subjects invoke war battles in descriptions of raid. Rattlers proclaim themselves American, call the Eagles communists.
The Eagles will be winners of the tournament, and we have things arranged so we can take pictures and make recordings.
The Eagles won for two reasons. One is that they'd had been reduced to nine boys, and so we felt that the Rattlers were stronger group. Interesting, I mentioned that on activities they'd get together, they would curse before thing, and the Eagles would pray. Even for meals, when they gave blessings or whatever, they did it very differently. So the Rattlers viewed themselves as toughies, and we viewed them as being tougher.
Was there a point where you were worried about, for example, if the Eagles had lost, were you worried at any point that there might be boys who just wanted to go home?
Yeah. The Eagles, some were homesick, and so that came up a little bit now and again, not with the Rattlers. But with the Eagles, we were afraid would fall apart if they lost. Want to go home, get sick, something. But it was deliberate that we let them win.
Now for the results of the last contest. The time for the Rattlers in the last contest was 10 minutes and 15 seconds. The time for the Eagles was 8 minutes and 38 seconds. Gives the Eagles a...
Robber's Cave. Stage 2 completed. Hypothesis supported. Successful achievement of intergroup hostility.
You're supposed to be sitting here. Hey, creep, move. I sit here. No,
you do not.
Gosh, you didn't have to do that.
You do not, Johnny. You sit over here.
I do not. David sits there.
He does not.
Why are you sitting there?
Second observation. Increased violence threatens to destabilize experiment.
There were two cooks, actually, and they were really bothered at the misbehavior of the boys, throwing food and cursing. And so they were getting ready to quit.
Because during the second stage, there were food fights, weren't there?
Yes, there were. Yeah, there were food fights and bad names thrown at each other. But that really bothered the ladies that we would allow... They chided us that we would allow the boys to throw food at each other, and the Rattlers cursed.
There was also a stage, wasn't there, where you actually had to break up fights between the boys. Can you talk a bit about that?
I remember one of the games. I don't remember if it was baseball or what, but they had thrown each other down and were slugging and broke that up. And then we had a week of interdependence, again, going back to interdependence, between the groups. We were trying to break down the hostility between the groups.
Third and final stage. From enmity to cooperation. Action. Create problem situations that groups must come together to solve.
Well, the whole idea was to get a situation where they would have to cooperate to achieve a common goal, which Sheriff later came to call in common predicament. And we were trying to show that just being together doesn't create peace, that you have to have more than that. And if one looks at so much of the research on prejudice reduction, historically you've had persons of different groups just get together. And it was our view that you needed some sort of a common goal. There has to be some pressure for them to cooperate before they do it.
I remember the truck breaking down, and I do remember us being gathered around the truck, a lot of us.
Was there something about a bus breaking down or a truck?
Yes, it was. One of the trucks we took out of action. But so that left them just with one truck. And so the question is, and it wouldn't start by prearrangement. We'd fix it where it wouldn't start. So they had to work together to get it to start. And they finally, they had a rope. They put the rope under the bumper, and all the Eagles got on one strand of the rope, and all the Rattlers got on the other. They pulled and pulled, and I disconnected the light. So when I put my foot on the brake, they couldn't see the light come on. All of them got on one strand, which was, you know, pretty important. They all got on one strand. When they all got on one strand of the rope and pulled, strangely, the old truck started.
Do you remember the truck breaking down?
Yeah, kind of. I remember we were trying to pull it. I don't remember where we were. And we were going down a dusty road almost all day, it seemed like. And every one of us were covered with a layer of dust. And that's when I remembered some of those guys from the other camp. So by then, we were together on that trip, I know, and not fighting. We were going somewhere together. The overall experience of the thing turned out great because we ended up being friends and eating together. And maybe that's the way it was supposed to turn out, or that's what they were trying to see, how quick it would happen or what. It did, because I remember riding in that truck with those guys from that other cabin.
Down to Oklahoma I rode one sunny day.
It was my first time away from my parents. I didn't cry. I liked that. I liked it. I was old enough to, hey, I'm getting out here on my own, and I'm lucky. And so, for me, it was a great trip. My parents didn't have a lot of money. You know, I didn't get sent away or anything every summer to a camp or anything.
And I remember getting a little bit homesick, but I didn't realize how homesick I was till we actually got home and I saw my parents, and I was pretty excited to see them. And I remember even tearing up and crying a little bit when I saw my folks.
Confirmation bias. The psychological process in which an experimenter selectively pays attention to those details that support the hypothesis. Does belief and desire shape observation?
June 27, 1954. The recording that will follow will deal with spontaneous reactions of the subjects in two groups who will have their meals separately for the last time.
In a sense, Sharif went in with a particular point of view about what would happen that's a bit counter, isn't it, to what we expect from a scientific study, where in theory you go in with an open mind.
No, it wasn't open. No, you're quite right. You're quite correct.
So he had a very definite script in mind.
Oh, he did indeed.
The staff would push things along, which were really, you know, to encourage certain kinds of behaviors that were in line with the hypotheses, which you're not supposed to do.
Dr. Muzaffar Sharif at a public lecture in 1966.
So we've got it recorded. The question is, what ethical problems do you see in studying groups without the knowledge of the members of the group?
I don't see any ethical problem at all. I think the ethical problem comes
If, in the name of science, you abuse or do harm to the people in question.
Given the widespread use of such forms of deception in social psychology, it really probably didn't even occur to the investigators that they were doing anything remotely unusual. There are various places in the text where the authors refer to boys roughing each other up. Now, I don't know what roughing up means. I don't know what kinds of activities they were engaged in. But both within the groups, you had what we might call a bully or two today, and between the groups, when the groups came into contact and all this conflict was generated, you had occasional examples of so-called roughing up. You couldn't even begin to do such kind of research today.
Calgary, Canada, May 2010. Hank Stamm, Professor of Psychology, University of Calgary. Specialization, the history and theory of psychology.
Here you had an example of how two groups that appeared to hate each other came together, presented a kind of hopeful picture of how to overcome conflict. And, of course, it also bolstered the claim that social scientists were making that they had something to contribute to the problems of the world.
In recognizing a communist, physical appearance counts for nothing.
The raw, harsh, unpleasant fact is that communism is an issue and will be an issue in 1954.
The early 1950s were marked by deep anxieties about the Cold War, but also the United States was just coming through the period of McCarthyism. And the contrast to this between the Robbers Cave experiments and the message it gave about reconciliation and overcoming conflict was so stark in contrast to the reigning ethos of the period.
There's something very idealistic about it too, isn't there?
Yeah, very much so, yes. It's a kind of sense that you have that both science and the clear demonstration of certain variables in an experimental context can come to the aid of, what are genuine social problems.
There's always a context, you know, and that all these kinds of famous experiments in the history of social psychology that we talk about in the Robbers Cave and this cave. And there's attention given to the researcher, to the research question, to the design of the study, and then, of course, to the interest in the outcome of the study.
July 2012. David Baker, Director of the Archives of the History of American Psychology, University of Akron.
And asking a question that doesn't get asked very often is, what is the experience of the subject in that study?
I just wonder what the boy's perspective on all of this really was. We really only ever get the story from the investigators. We get a kind of cleaned up final picture of how it all worked, and it's written in the language of experimentation, so it's couched in a formal social scientific rhetoric with reference to in-group and out-group and conflict as a kind of process that occurs within and between groups. It's all very sanitized. And you have a sense in reading it today, I think, at least I do, that, boy, I wonder what really went on here. You know, what were these kids up to? What was their view of this?
I don't remember it as a bad experience viscerally. It's in retrospect and in reading these transcripts and thinking about what kind of men would be standing there taking notes and pictures of boys as they struggled over a game of tug of war. You know, who are these bastards? I mean, that I got angry about that part. And then 3 weeks at 10 years old,
come on, you know, that's not right. So, no, it was not anything done bad to me in my, as far as I know, and I really believe that. Yes, it probably made me a better person in the long run, or a tougher person, or whatever. I'll buy that. But it wasn't right. It was the wrong thing to do, morally.
I don't know. They did a pretty good job what they were doing, I think. Being a policeman for the last 35, 40 years, I, in fact, have a college degree in sociology. And I can understand that back then, how they would want to know the answer to that conflict among groups and people in general. And I think it's kind of novel that they would pick a group of 11-year-olds to do it. I haven't read the book, but I'm getting more interested in reading it. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a psychologist, but I'm not dead yet. And I might like it. I don't know. Especially since I was there.
Such an incredible story. Inside the Robber's Cave was written and produced by Gina Perry. The sound engineer was Richard Gervin, and the supervising producer was Michelle Rayner. This program is dedicated to the memory of O.J. Harvey, who died in 2011. And coincidentally, a month after the completion of the study, when it was still unpublished and unknown, a British writer was having his first novel hit the bookshops. The writer was William Golding. The book was Lord of the Flies, whose plot and theme bears striking parallels with The Robber's Cave. Thanks also to the staff at the Archives of the History of American Psychology at the University of Akron for their help and permission to use archival material from the Sheriff Collection.